Hello, I'm Andrew Tuck, and you're listening to Tall Stories on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. This week, we turn the focus back to London to take a look at the Millennium Dome. When it was first built, the promise was it would be a symbol of a bold and contemporary Britain. But it became anything but that. Here's our contributor, Henry Rhys Sheridan.
On the eve of the millennium, London and the UK was going through a somewhat unexpected cultural renaissance. British music, fashion and art were globally prominent in a way they hadn't been since the 1960s. And in 1997, the country elected a new Prime Minister, Tony Blair. With his relative youth and charm, Blair embodied a sense of optimism that was as unfamiliar as it was welcome. This national confidence boost was also reflected in several ambitious urban projects set to mark the millennium in London. The Tate Art Gallery was to open a new museum specialising in modern and contemporary art in a repurposed power plant. A giant Ferris wheel called the London Eye was being erected on the South Bank. And a new footbridge across the Thames was planned, the first to be built in over a century. But the biggest and most heralded of these projects was the Millennium Dome.
In 1851, the Great Exhibition was opened in Hyde Park. 6 million people went to see it. 100 years later, in 1951, the Festival of Britain was a similar success, and over 8 million visitors braved the wettest summer in years to see the spectacle. Now, for the year 2000, it's time for the biggest experience of them all. It's the 21st century. The future is now. The Dome at Greenwich, the biggest dome in the world and the first wonder of the new millennium.
It was a massive structure to be built on the site of a contaminated former gasworks on the Greenwich Peninsula, the largest undeveloped site along the Thames. Greenwich was an eminently suitable place to host a symbol of the new millennium. It's home to the Prime Meridian, the starting point of international timekeeping. This fact was not lost on the architect Richard Rogers, who laid the temporal symbolism on thick. The structure is 365 metres in diameter, 1 metre for every day of the year. It's supported by 12 100-metre-high yellow support towers, one for each month of the year. There are 24 curved cutouts at the base of its canopy, one, you guessed it, for each hour of the day. And for good measure, the panels on the canopy itself are based on the celestial lines of longitude and latitude. But with a structure that impressive, what could possibly match it inside?
To decide this, the country's most inspired and creative designers came up with a unique experience made of 14 cutting-edge attractions that would never have been seen before.
The exhibition was called the Millennium Experience and was set to run throughout the year 2000. It sought to give an overview of life at the turn of the millennium, with zones dedicated to themes such as body, mind, faith, work, and transport. In the middle of it all, there was a performance area that would, over the course of the year, host a gymnastic show scored by Peter Gabriel no fewer than 999 times. But in spite of all this, and for reasons Peter Gabriel can be held only partly responsible for, the Dome was one of the most staunchly opposed urban developments in recent British history. After it failed to attract private investment, the government salvaged the Dome with money from the National Lottery. There was a perception that the Dome was Blair's pet vanity project, and that its destiny had become too tied up with the prestige of the new Labour government. There were also some good old-fashioned practical snafus. The tube station that was built to serve the Dome arrived 14 months late. On the opening night, New Year's Eve, a ticketing problem kept VIP guests waiting outside for hours. In the words of its architect, Richard Rogers, the Millennium Dome couldn't have had a worse reception if you'd worked hard to deliberately upset everyone. But its troubles had only just begun. After the Dome opened, it soon became clear that the number of visitors to the Millennium Experience over the course of the year had been grossly overestimated. The financial estimates were based on 12 million visitors making their way to Greenwich, but just over half that number came. In order to compensate for this shortfall, the amount of lottery money required to fund the dome was £204 million more than the original estimate. The Millennium Experience itself was also criticised as lacking in content, in particular by Conservatives who thought it wasn't British enough. But it's important to point out that a poll at the time placed visitor satisfaction at 85%. When the Millennium Experience ended, there was uncertainty about what to do with the dome next. Plans to turn it into a football stadium or a high-tech business park never came to fruition. It was eventually sold to a company called Meridian Delta to turn into an entertainment complex, and in 2005 it was publicly renamed the O2 Arena. The venue launched in 2007 with a concert by Bon Jovi.
Thank you!
Since then, the Dome, a structure that was on course to become the first and biggest white elephant of the 21st century, has become a surprising success story. It's the largest entertainment venue in Europe and hosts an estimated 9 million visitors a year, more than the number that came to see the Millennium Experience in 2000. But in the minds of many British people, the Dome remains a byword for hubris. Any sense of national rebirth that clung to Tony Blair after the Millennium was lost forever when he sent British troops to Iraq and Afghanistan in 2003.
Tonight, British servicemen and women are engaged from air, land and sea.
Indeed, in hindsight, the Millennium Dome project seems like a warning sign of the excessive optimism that would inform that disastrous decision. Still, Dome apologists can take solace in the fact that it wasn't the only millennial urban development to go wrong. The Millennium Bridge, which connected historic St Paul's Cathedral to the new Tate Modern Gallery, opened 2 months late. To add insult to injury, on its first day, it began to sway violently as the first pedestrians crossed it. After just 2 days, the bridge was closed for almost 2 years to fix a problem. Perhaps this, a wobbly bridge struggling to connect the past with the future, is a much more apt expression of Britain at the turn of the millennium than the Dome, after all.
You've been listening to Tall Stories, a Monocle 24 production. Our thanks to Henry Rhys Sheridan for today's episode. Remember to tune in every Thursday for the full 30-minute edition of The Urbanist. I'm Andrew Tuck. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, City Lovers.